Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which you can visit at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host Jasper, Ghostface Milla is here, and don't be jealous, we actually just got back from returning our tuxes after attending the 84th Annual Academy Awards viewings held in our respective living rooms. We wear tuxes because it's fancy. Anyway, on this special overlong 40th episode of Scorncast, we're going to discuss The Big Night and its winners, including the artist, Hugo, and Meryl Streep, who took home her third Oscar for her performance as Margaret Thatcher in The Iron Lady. Ugh, I am getting so sick of Meryl Streep winning all these Oscars 29 and 32 years ago.
When they called my name, I had this feeling I could hear half of America going, "Oh, no. Oh, come on, why? Her. Again." You know? But, whatever.
So, Ghostface, worst Oscars ever?
I mean, it's not that they were bad, they were just so predictable and so, like, safe.
Yeah, but worst Oscars ever is traditionally what people say after the Oscars.
I know, every year people say that. And for me, it's like, I never think the Oscars are the worst because the Oscars are, like, what they are.
Yeah, what did these people expect exactly?
Yeah, like, I never expect them to be revolutionary or really, like, progressive and as far as, like, what they give awards to and even what they nominate. I mean, if you look at the list of nominations, it's never like, "Oh, wow, I'm so glad that got a nominee." You know, it's always like, right, duh, okay. Oh, wow, that one, all right, whatever.
Yeah, we're doing things a little bit differently than I thought we would this year. We did a podcast before the nominees were announced where we talked about who the likely nominees were going to be. And I think in my mind, I thought we would do a podcast right before the awards like we did last year where we talked about who would win. But by the time that the Oscars were about to air, it seemed like everything that was up in the air kind of had like a pretty clear front runner. So there wasn't much point to do a pre-Oscars podcast since, you know, we'd just be saying what pretty much everyone else was saying. So I thought, why not do a post-Oscars Scorncast, and that way we'll actually get to talk about kind of like the celebrity side of things, which we don't really get a chance to do much on Scorncast since we're more like movie-centric, and we don't get a chance to talk about like the gossipy kind of stuff or like what people are wearing and things like that. So
yeah, in other words, my bread and butter.
Was that a Carol Channing?
No, I think it was like somewhere in between maybe Carol Channing and Paula Deen.
Oh, okay.
My bread and butter.
I would say, for a jumping off point of discussion, one of the things that we did in our pre-nomination Scorncast was we broke down each of the acting categories and we talked about who the five likely nominees were going to be and sort of based who we would want to win off that. And we also got a chance to pick like who we would want to see get nominated that probably didn't have a chance of being nominated. So if you haven't listened to that, you should listen to that. Not you, but everyone else. I know you've listened to it many times. But one of the things that I would say about the nominees is that kind of we had like one little surprise in each category based on what we were thinking at the time, which was general, you know, what everyone else was thinking. Best actor, Michael Fassbender, we said would probably be a nominee. Damien Bashir took that slot for A Better Life.
And he was up for it. I mean, he was being rumored as like sort of a long shot. Like a lot of people, they were his dream choice to be nominated.
Yeah. I mean, he got the SAG nomination, so I don't think it was very surprising. But just in terms of how much hype there was on Michael Fassbender's performance and how like it was sort of ordained as an Oscar lock even before it came out. It's kind of interesting because, you know, A Better Life opened and closed without much buzz, I think, at all earlier in 2011. In Best Actress, we had said Tilda Swinton would get nominated probably for We Need to Talk About Kevin. And what happened in that category was Rooney Mara for Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs were both nominated. And I think the general thought process was that one of them would get nominated, not both of them. So that kind of shut out Tilda Swinton. For Best Supporting Actor, this is probably one of the weirdest ones that happened. Max von Sydow got nominated for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. And he took the slot that a lot of people thought would go to Albert Brooks for Drive. And supporting actress Janet McTeer got the nomination that I think a lot of people were saying would go to Shailene Woodley for The Descendants. So, and I don't know if I mentioned it, but Janet McTeer was in Albert Nobbs. I talk very fast sometimes and I don't even think of what I'm saying. The biggest shock, like I said, probably was Albert Brooks, just because I know you weren't a fan of that performance, but when Drive was released, I think all you heard coming out of that movie was that it probably won't be nominated for any Oscars, even though it deserves to, except for Albert Brooks.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I guess I did think he was a lock for a nomination. I never thought that he would win.
No.
So it's one of those things where it's like, does this person get awarded with a nomination? You know, which I still think is kind of like, whatever.
I mean, I think people are just like, oh, Albert Brooks played so much against type. He's usually these, you know, neurotic comedy roles. And here he is this, you know, really venomous kind of scary mob guy. And I mean, I like that performance a lot. I was really surprised he wasn't in the final five. And I guess more to the point that a person from Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close knocked him out. Although if you're going to nominate anybody from Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, you know, obviously it's going to be Max von Sydow.
No, Sandra Bullock?
Well,
I'm just kidding.
I mean, I heard a lot about that up until Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close's release, that she was carrying a lot of buzz for this movie. And honestly, you know, I would rather see her get a Best Supporting Actress nomination than that movie be nominated for Best Picture, so.
Yeah, but that's what happens when there's 10 nominations.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing about the picture nominations this year is that there were 9. When they changed the rule this year so that it could be anywhere from 5 to 10, and I think a lot of people were anticipating it was going to be closer to 5 than it was 10.
Yeah.
The Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close is the only thing that surprised people in the Best Picture field. With those other 8 nominees, everyone kind of figured, sure, you know, whatever. The other 2, if it was going to be 10, a lot of people were talking about Bridesmaids and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Right.
Do you want to take a chance right now just to do some pronunciation exercises? Because I think I tweeted about this, but for some strange reason, Popscorn was like the number 8 or 9 search result for pronunciation of the actor from The Artist, which I'm not going to give away our pronunciation of it right now, but I think we both butchered it in that Scorn cast previously.
Yeah.
So it was just funny to me that it was like number 8 or number 9. It's dropping slowly. I think we're down to like 15 now.
Okay.
So hopefully people are realizing that we had no idea what we were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Someone has spread the word. I think what's hilarious about that is that like you like made a valiant effort at pronouncing his name, and I think you were pretty close, and I like jump in and I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it's this. I say something that has like 1 or 2 more syllables or something.
I think you excised a syllable from it, actually.
Yeah, I might have just cut it down. But I remember like trying to pay attention so hard at the Golden Globes to be like, oh, like how are they gonna say his name?
Yeah.
Because I'd only seen it written. I can't pronounce French. Like, what I would think it would be is not what it is at all.
Jean then, Dujardin?
Yeah, exactly. John Dujardin. which is awful. And then the director's name coming up at The Artist, too. Because when I saw The Artist, like, I enjoyed it. But I think we've talked about this. Like, I thought it was kind of like a novelty.
Yeah.
Just as far as, like, you know, like, oh, that movie's definitely going to get nominated. A movie about movies is huge, especially sort of a period movie or something that has, like, a gimmick or a twist on it. But I didn't think that it would actually sort of not sweep but do as well as it did. But I remember trying to make note of the director's name, and when it came up on the screen being like, oh, I'm never gonna be able to say that, you know, kind of thing.
There's a lot of vowels in it.
Yeah, never gonna be able to say that correctly is what I mean.
Well, luckily we didn't have to pronounce his name during that last Scorn cast because we only focused on the acting.
That's right. Yeah. But he seems like a really cool guy. I'll just try to say it right now, but I'm totally gonna mess it up. Michel Hazanavicius.
I'll give that an A for effort.
Like that?
Yeah. I liked his glasses.
Close. Yeah, he seemed like a cool guy. Yeah. That movie, I guess I thought that it would win some things, but not everything that it won, including Best Picture.
I mean, I think that how I feel about the Oscars this year, like, I wouldn't say worst Oscars ever, because I don't know, like I said, I don't know what people expect when they're watching an awards show.
Right.
They're handing out awards to people. It's sort of like, you know, not necessarily for merit, which is something we might get into. But I think indicative of how I felt about last year overall was how I felt about the Oscars this year in terms of, like, there were a lot of movies that I liked, but nothing I loved. Maybe 1 or 2 movies that I really, really loved. And most of the nominees this year overall, I was like, oh, about. And I was definitely, oh, about The Artist, which I thought was kind of like a really clever, witty, cute 30-minute short film that just had about an hour and 15 minutes of padding stuck in it.
Right.
I don't feel the love. But then again, Hugo was the other big winner that night. And that's another movie that I feel kind of lukewarm about as well. So
yeah, but isn't that also a movie about making movies?
Yeah, and I think those are really Oscar baity, but as far as I can tell, no movie about movies has ever actually won the Best Picture award.
Huh. I guess I think more like a movie that is sort of like period PC kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Trump's like movie about movie, and both Hugo and the artist were kind of both.
Yeah, that's true.
So I feel like they're like double threat, you know, or whatever. And then you throw in, you know, Scorsese on top of that. And I feel like that, you know, they want to reward him for something that's, you know, a little bit more family friendly.
Yeah.
Or a lot of bit family friendly, I think, right?
Yeah.
Pratfalls and fart jokes.
Nobody got whacked?
No, oh. I think it was Vulture who did like a really good infographic about the things that Scorsese used 3D for in that movie. And like 98% of it or something was like steam, like depth of steam. And I haven't seen it, but I was like, man, I kind of want to watch that now in 3D.
Yeah.
Like, I watched, everything else is just like vague foreground background, but the steam is like ever present in the 3D.
I know when I saw it at the movies, I was in constant fear of getting burned. So and I did, if you know what I mean. But no, it was perfectly fine. I think the other thing that was strange in that movie was the amount of abuse that Sacha Baron Cohen's crotch took. Because there's definitely a scene where the dog is pulling him down the train platform and he was taking a lot of like luggage to the crotch. I don't know, like there was just a lot going on in that movie that mystified me. And, you know, most of all, Hugo, the character who I was never like really that enchanted with, I actually kind of didn't like him. But yeah, the same thing with the artist. I just sort of was like, all right, it's cute. I, you know, I get it. I understand why people like it. But for me, there's something missing here.
Yeah, and I guess, like, for everything that I thought that it would win or that it would get nominated for, I never really considered Jean Dujardin to win Best Actor.
Very good job there.
Thank you. No, but really, I never considered him to win. I would have thought that Clooney would have gotten it again, or no, because he was only won for Supporting Actor, I think, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they would actually give him Best Actor this time around, or maybe even, God forbid, Brad Pitt, who, like, you know, never. Or even Gary Oldman, everyone's saying he was sort of, like, the never been nominated, you know, lifetime achievement kind of actor deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then to hear that Damien Bichir was nominated, I think that's how you say his name. I haven't seen that movie, but from everything I've heard, I think that's like such a, you know, interesting take on something that like Hollywood doesn't often embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's like an undocumented worker who's like fighting for the right of like his son and like all this stuff. And so I think it's cool that he got nominated. I've only seen that guy on Weeds and that his character was like awful on that show. So I was like, oh, he can actually act. That's great.
Yeah, I went into that night. I didn't know that Damien Bichir probably got the least amount of votes in that whole category, but I would have been so happy if he won. He really was amazing in A Better Life. Also, I would recommend that movie. Like, it's not what you think that it is. Like, when I started watching it, it's all set up this dynamic between him and his son, and he's working very hard, you know, like most hours of the day, and his son is sort of contemplating joining this gang at school. And it seems like an after school special in setup, but it goes to some really surprising places, and the ending kind of really packs a wallop in an unexpected way. So, I mean, I would have been really happy if he won that award. Or even, you know, Brad Pitt, even though we said that he would never probably win an Oscar because he's just too pretty.
I really don't think he will. I think he'll have to, like, gain a shit ton of weight or, like, wear a lot of makeup or just be super old to win.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to get him that Oscar when he played that insane mental patient in 12 Monkeys, and that didn't work, so.
Yeah, he was still attractive.
What does he got to do?
I know. It's like, just because you're slightly unbalanced doesn't mean I don't want to do you. In fact, that's not helping at all. No, but I always liked the clips that they showed of Moneyball, whether it was for Brad Pitt or just like Best Picture or Jonah Hill, because like, well, especially for the Best Picture, but for like the acting stuff, I never thought they really showed anything weighty from Brad Pitt or Jonah Hill. But yeah. I haven't seen the movie.
No, and but they weren't weighty performances. They were exactly what the roles demanded, which is not, I don't think, weightiness at all. But it always made me laugh how like in all of Brad Pitt's Oscar clips, it was like him leaning back in a chair.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It seemed like a Funnier Die sketch. Yes. Like it was like Sports Guy Contemplates Life or something.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of Funnier Die sketches, do you want to talk about Meryl Streep and the Iron Lady?
Yeah. So I haven't seen the Iron Lady, okay? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen most of these movies, so the fact that I'm commenting on them is already stupid, right?
Can I pat myself on the back really quickly?
Sure.
This is the first year, I should have said this earlier.
All of them, right?
This is the first year that I've seen all the pictures, directors, actor, actress, supporting actor, and supporting actress before the ceremony, which is just strange in that how little I liked, like, overall this whole crop of films from last year. No, I mean, I thought, you know, I have my favorites. As far as Best Picture goes, I like The Descendants a lot.
Yeah.
I like liked Moneyball. I liked War Horse.
And loved The Help.
I didn't love The Help. I mean, I thought The Help was better than, you know, Tree of Life or Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Wait, you mean someone quietly praying or a dinosaur stepping on another dinosaur's head is not better than The Help?
You know what? If The Tree of Life had less scenes of people touching each other on the face,
right,
it would have been a big hit with me. But I mean, if they cut all those scenes in The Tree of Life out where people are like gently placing their hands on each other's body parts, and not in the fun way,
right,
that movie would have been like an hour long.
Yeah, it would have been mostly shots of, like, ethereal shots of things in space or something.
Yes.
What were those things? They were like Apple Mac screensavers.
Yes, with occasional voiceover narration.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was like the intro and outro of a really long music video,
yeah,
but without the music part.
Yeah.
I didn't get that movie, but I did think that there were some really good performances in it. I actually preferred Brad Pitt in that. I mean, I didn't see him in Moneyball, but I'm sure I would prefer him in that. And I really liked Jessica Chastain.
Yeah,
no. She was great.
Yeah, but I've got to say, Jessica Chastain in The Help was pretty amazing.
Really?
Yeah, playing...
I really like that character, and I'm sure she does it justice.
Yeah, playing just a person who is just total caricature at first, and then, you know, through the writing, which is some of the better writing, I think, is with her character in that film, and through the performance, there's a lot that's underneath that caricature. But Meryl Streep, speaking of caricatures,
okay.
Question mark, maybe?
Going back, yeah. All right, so I didn't see The Iron Lady, but when I first saw the trailer for it, first of all, I heard that she was playing her, like, so long ago, and I was like, that's amazing. I really want to see that, and I bet it's going to be awesome, you know. And I don't know that much about Margaret Thatcher, but I was into it. And then I think I heard the Weinsteins were involved, and I was like, okay, that's cool too, whatever. And then, like, I first saw, like, a teaser trailer, and it's just, like, her clutching a bag and, like, you know, that power suit, and she kind of tilts her head, and she has, like, you know, the teeth and whatever. And I forget even what she says, but, like, she very well could have said, like, pip, pip, cheerio.
It was something about her pearls, right?
Yeah, it was something that was, like, so over-the-top British and so, like... caricature, to reuse a word, like, that I was like, is that real? Is that fucking real? And it seemed like an impression, you know? Mm-hmm. I was still interested, but I just never got around to it. So then when I heard she was getting all this buzz, I was like, of course she is. She's Meryl fucking Streep. Like, she's amazing. She could read the film book and, like, make you cry and make you think about all these other things because she's, like, Meryl Streep, you know? Like,
and make you laugh.
Yeah, I don't doubt her acting ability.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's someone who, like, snorted the insides of an orchid and, like, made you believe it, you know? Like, and then who also, like, took a Silkwood shower, you know? Like,
these are things you're talking about she did in her real life also.
Yeah, these are her real life. She's a method. She's method.
Yeah.
But no, I just never saw it. So, like, I've heard really good things, and I totally believe that she is awesome and that it is great. Well, actually, I've heard the movie is kind of crap, but her performance carries the whole thing, which, like, duh. So I'm interested into how you think about it, because not to say I was shocked that she won, I was shocked that they gave it to her, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say a couple things. I think that, you know, people are thinking that that was a surprising moment in the evening when, in fact, it really it wasn't. Number one, because she's Meryl Streep, and it was going to happen again. I mean, let's, you know, just lay it out there. She's won twice before, like 29 and 32 years ago.
Right.
So I think she's been nominated 15 times since then.
No, I think it was, 15 since, yeah.
Because I think they say 17-time nominee, but I think they're counting her two wins from Kramer versus Kramer and Sophie's Choice, which I almost just called Jessica's Choice for some reason. I don't know why I did that. But for me, I never really thought that Viola Davis was the front runner for The Help. It was more like sort of a very close race. You know, obviously The Help was a much more popular movie than The Iron Lady was. I think The Help was the highest grossing movie of all the Best Picture nominees.
Really?
So people really liked it. It was a movie that played very well to its audience, and people wanted Viola Davis to win. Even though I have every suspicion that Viola Davis is going to sort of become like the new Meryl Streep in terms of her performances just again and again, surpassing the movies that they're in most of the time even. I mean, she's already doing it. When she shows up in movies like Law Abiding Citizen, which is crap, or even she was in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, whenever she shows up in movies like this, I just get so excited to see her. I'm like, oh, you, thank God, you know?
Yeah, right.
but yeah, I'm actually a Streep defender here, because I think that in the context of the clips that made it into the trailer and things, they do, I agree with you, they do look awful. I think that's more the direction than her performance. This woman who directed The Iron Lady, her name's Phyllida Lloyd, I think. She directed Mamma Mia, which I don't know if you saw Mamma Mia, but it's an abomination.
Mamma Mia is awful.
It's really bad. And I don't know, like, I guess through their friendship, her relationship with Meryl Streep, maybe they came up with this idea to do this Margaret Thatcher biography. But the way that she shoots things, I found really distracting in Mamma Mia, and the way that she shoots things in The Iron Lady, it's very strange. She shoots Streep from strange angles, like sort of head on in very tight close-ups, and it does look like, in that respect, a Funny or Die video. But I think, you know, pulling those moments out of the movie, it looks worse than it is. I was not a fan of this movie, but I was a big fan of this performance, just because the parts that they don't show you, I think, in the marketing campaign are the scenes where Streep is playing Margaret Thatcher as somebody who's like up in her 80s, I want to say, and she's suffering from dementia. The makeup, which won an Oscar this year, is really astounding on her. And the way that Meryl Streep inhabits this person, like, I don't know very much about Margaret Thatcher at all. And like, I basically know like the paragraph Wikipedia synopsis that starts that Wikipedia page. But I would say that the thing that really got to me about her performance in The Iron Lady is that part of it, which I would say is probably over one third of the movie, where she is reminiscing about her life. It's this, you know, typical biography. And I'm not a fan of biographies that do that whole life story thing. I'm more into things that
the
are...
The Academy is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's insane. Like, that's one of my least favorite genres next to, like, Westerns. But I like the biographies that are kind of more selective in their time frames than just a general overview of their whole life. Like, I would offer Milk as an example of that. Or Frost Nixon, which is taking, like, historical figures.
Yeah, like a moment.
And, yeah, giving you a very encapsulated thing that they're right. building the drama around. This is more like that sprawling overview of her life.
Yeah. Every 20 years or 5 years or something, you check in.
Yeah, it's like greatest hits. And not only that, but like in some of the ways it's directed and the way it's marketed, I felt more watching the commercials and the trailers than I did watching the movie. But I was like, it seems like Dolores Umbridge, the movie.
Oh God.
But
that's kind of what it seemed like.
Yeah, yeah. But the stuff with her as the older version of Margaret Thatcher and sort of playing this woman who's, I think, maybe, you know, 25, 27 years older than how Meryl Streep actually is. She's in her early 60s, which threw me, because I, even though she's been acting for so long, I would have guessed that Meryl Streep is like in her 50s. I guess maybe just on a personal level, because there have been people in my family recently that have been suffering from dementia. What got to me about that performance was just how she played this older character. That I think the makeup combined with her performance, I never felt like I was watching Meryl Streep. I felt like I was watching a very sad, very lonely old woman.
I just would have thought the Academy would have probably awarded Viola Davis for more of the choice of the movie and sort of like the statement behind that. I mean, you know, it's a movie based on a book or whatever, you know, a book within a book, where a white woman has given a voice to, you know, these kind of like marginalized, you know, the help, the maids, the nannies, and kind of told their story. And I feel like, as patronizing as it can seem, I would have thought that the Academy would have said, like, we recognize this and like this part of our history, and whether or not this movie is like great and it's totally making like, you know, the right narrative and the right like choices to kind of paint its characters, this is still a really good performance. And it's like bringing all that into account kind of thing. But anyway, I just think Viola Davis is totally going to be nominated again. But I also think Meryl Streep will totally be nominated again.
Sure.
I don't know. I guess I was just sort of like, it seems so obvious and so safe that Meryl Streep would get it. Performance aside, it just seems like such a thing that the Academy would do.
I mean, and the thing is, it's going to happen again, and it's going to happen again in terms of her being nominated.
Yeah, totally.
So, but I guess my point is just like, well, why not for this? You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
if
yeah,
it's going
to, totally.
And she'll win again, so. Yeah.
That's what I'm not commenting on, because I haven't seen it. So, like, for me, it's not like a, oh, of course, for this kind of thing. It's just like a, because I feel like the Academy never rewards people for their actual performance. It's always like sort of catching up or nominating someone like Jessica Chastain, who like has sort of a hat trick, you know, like several, you know, movies in a year, good performances in a year.
Well, where was Ryan Gosling's nomination then?
Yeah, seriously. Give me a critic category, you know? Hey, girl. I guess the whole, like, Meryl Streep winning thing, like, that wasn't an upset to me at all.
No,
that
no.
reminded me of, like, you know, watching the Oscars when I was a kid. And it sort of, like, went to who was obvious. And the fact that Billy Crystal was hosting was, like, even more nostalgic for me. And, like, the jokes they made and, like, all those things. I just felt like a kid watching the Academy Awards.
Well, he was hosting a lot when we were kids.
That's what I mean. No, yeah. Like, the whole thing just felt very nostalgic to me. Even though I don't think I've ever seen Meryl Streep win and give an award speech, it just seemed like I had. And, like, knowing the artist was going to win,
yeah,
I kind of didn't think it deserved it. It just made sense. Like, those guys came up on stage, they gave their speech. It was like a dream I'd already had.
I'm going to call you out and say that Meryl Streep, I don't think, has won in your lifetime.
That's what I'm saying. I've never seen her give an Academy Award speech. I've seen her win Golden Globes, I think.
Sure, sure.
And maybe SAGs and stuff like that. But when did she win for Sophie's Choice?
I think Sophie's Choice was the 32 years ago one, and Kramer versus Kramer was 29.
Oh, okay. Yep. Not me. Wasn't
around. Billy Crystal is host. I like how we set this up. We're going to talk about the celebrity side of it, and then we just spent like 25 minutes talking about the acting part.
Sorry.
No. I mean, it's fun to talk about. But Billy Crystal, did you like the jokes about bedbugs in New York City?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like his jokes were so tired.
Yeah.
Like, the only part that really made me laugh was when they did, like, the internal thoughts.
That was great.
Right. That was, like, clearly written by somebody else, you know, like Conan or somebody, you know, like, mm-hmm. had sort of a spin on it.
Yeah, the whole thing about the song montage in the beginning where Billy Crystal always does that thing. I was just like, I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, me too.
I will say the one good joke in that performance was that the really brief attention that he paid to Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Because he did this pop song medley kind of thing with lyrics from existing songs and then kind of taking the best picture synopsis and titles and like putting them in there. And Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close just got one really quick line, which was Hanks for the memories. So, and then he moved right on to the next thing. So I was like, okay.
I appreciated that Justin Bieber was there, but that was about it.
Was he in the audience?
No, I mean, he was in that little bit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I feel like the older I get when I watch the Oscars, the more it's becoming like the MTV Movie Awards.
Oh, God.
Like, no, I mean, it's just like in that it's sort of ridiculous and it's sort of like, this is going to be crazy. And then you watch it and like the jokes are like really, really tired. And I mean, I thought when Whoopi hosted and Bruce Vilanch wrote her jokes, like it wasn't hilarious, but it was at least sort of out there.
Yeah.
And they said things and like called out the Academy on certain things. And like, I appreciated that.
But yeah, this is probably one of the shorter Oscar ceremonies in recent memory. It was just, I think, maybe 10 minutes over 3 hours. Mm-hmm. I was surprised it even was that long, because for me it felt even a little bit shorter. And I think one of the reasons why is they ditched a lot of the montage stuff that they usually do. I mean, they were still granted some excess montages that could have been cut. Like, there was a certain point in the evening I was like, why are we looking at clips from Forrest Gump and Titanic? Like, what is the purpose of this?
That was weird. The Cirque du Soleil thing, I think, was kind of weird.
You know, in theory, I see how that would have been a really good idea, but it was shot so poorly.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not sure that any of that stuff was really, like, produced well and shot well for, like, live television.
Yeah, it was bothersome.
Yeah, and the sound was awful. People were complaining about the sound.
Yeah, I noticed that right away, and I kept thinking, like, wow, they're going to correct this. No, they're going to correct
this.
Me too.
I was like,
gonna
when they come back from commercial, it'll be fixed.
Yeah, everyone was talking inside a tin can.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would say what the biggest stories of the night, aside from Streep winning, which wasn't a story at all, really, in my opinion, were not even related to like Oscars. It was the Angelina Jolie's leg.
Right. The crab stance leg.
Yes. Jennifer Lopez's nip slip, which actually didn't happen.
I was going to say, I don't think that was like a shadow of her areola.
I'm basically angry that the internet has made me study Jennifer Lopez's breasts as much as I have. But no, I don't see anything going on there. And Sacha Baron Cohen dumping fake Kim Jong-il ashes on Ryan Seacrest on the red carpet.
That was actually pretty great.
I'm all for dumping things on Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah, and I think what was so great about that is that like it was clear that he was not in on the joke, and he was very upset about it.
Yeah.
He often ruins things that are about him by joining in on the fun. That was one of the first times that we got to keep it.
It's our moment
now.
Hold
on to that moment. Yeah.
Well, here's my question, though. Do you think that will end up in the Dictator movie?
Probably. Yeah,
as soon as that happened, I thought, okay, this is going to wind up in the movie because Ryan Seacrest will sign a release form.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, oh, I'm making fun of myself.
Yeah, exactly, which kind of does kind of ruin it. Yeah, but I mean, I feel like that movie probably needs that scene because, like, from what I'm seeing, it looks too scripted for my taste for, like, Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy, like, John C. Reilly, and, you know, it looks funny, but whatever. But yeah, I mean, the whole, like, hullabaloo about him being banned and then not banned, and, like, and I thought that was kind of, like, so tired. Again, it was sort of like an MTV Movie Awards kind of, like, gimmick that, like, the Academy was like, we can't, and they're like, actually, we need this, so please.
I think my personal high point of the evening was when the girl with the dragon tattoo won for best editing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't expect that to happen. The winner of best editing is usually the winner for best picture. So I had guessed the artist in my Oscar pool at work. And I wanted Girl with a Dragon Tattoo to win because that was probably the best edited movie in the category. And it won. And I was like, oh, wow. And then I kind of thought, okay, you're getting excited about the winner for best editing. And I think that was my high point for the evening.
I feel like the opening sequence should have been nominated for something.
They should invent an award for opening sequences.
Yeah, because I feel like that's still an art, and that should be part of something.
Yeah.
Especially David Fincher movies. I mean, like, whatever. If that had existed, Hitchcock would have won one, or at least the guy who always helped him with those openings, whose name I forget. But anyway.
Yeah, did you think, speaking of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the clips that they were showing of these movies were very spoilery?
Oh, yeah, and they've always been like that. Like, I feel like what was spoiled for me, something... Oh, Hugo was totally spoiled for me.
Yeah, there were some big spoilers for Hugo. They give away the ending of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
It was so interesting, too, how the Academy, like, pimped out the cast of Bridesmaids, like, every commercial break.
Yeah.
They, like it started, and they were like, coming up on the Academy Awards, the cast of Bridesmaids. We have to go to commercial break, but coming back, the cast of Bridesmaids. And they just kept talking about it, and, like, the award that Bridesmaids was nominated for, and Melissa McCarthy, star of Bridesmaids. You know, like,
yeah, it was almost like they were being apologists for all the stuff winning being things. I mean, I guess Hugo did okay at the box office, considering its subject matter and, you know, the artsiness of it. But with The Artist, you know, winning, it's a movie that not a lot of people have seen. I don't think that certain people have any desire to see. It's not, you know, it's just, I'm saying, like, it's not a very populist choice. So it was like they were sort of trying to make up for that by saying, like, oh, here's the cast of Bridesmaids. That was a really popular movie.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, there was rumors that it could even get nominated for Best Picture because of, you know, the 10, and also a way, you know, to get other people to watch the show, you know, like, get some more sort of popular movies that are still sort of respected, like District 9 or whatever, from years past.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Melissa McCarthy, people were like, oh, like, she's probably not going to win, but, like, she totally could, or, you know, whatever, her getting nominated. And I just felt like it was just such a way to get, like, people to watch this show that is so just dated and out of touch, you know, like, overall. So, like, the Academy's, they need to make some really interesting choices, I think, like, the next couple of years. Like, I feel like they're sort of split in between the directions that they want to go. And I don't think the 10 movie nominations is helping. And I feel like there's other choices there that are kind of, like, just random and don't go with the whole, like, sort of crusty white men voting for things that are kind of, like, obvious, you know, a black and white silent film.
A lot of the bits that they did with the presenters reminded me of last year with Anne Hathaway and James Franco hosting.
Yeah.
At least that was something that the Academy tried, and it didn't work at all. But, you know, they tried to do something different. It's not like they got Billy Crystal back again. I mean, it was sort of interesting to watch because Anne Hathaway was so overcompensating. I don't hate James Franco, I should say, for the record. And I thought he was kind of, like, unfairly pooped on a lot last year.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, he's James Franco. You don't ask him to host the Oscars and expect him to do things like Billy Crystal or Chris Rock would do.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of the presenting things, the little sketches that they did, like the ones with Emma Stone and
Ben Stiller,
and then the other one, which was, I thought, really weird, was the one with Gwyneth Paltrow and Robert Downey Jr. Like, it went on for an uncomfortably long time with him being, like, filming this for a fake documentary. I didn't get it at all.
Yeah, I was like, is this going to be an Iron Man 3? Like, I was like, are they going to, like, somehow spin this and he's supposed to be Tony Stark?
He was playing Tony Stark at the Oscars, essentially.
He was, right? Yeah, and she was sort of being Pepper.
Yeah, they'll dye her hair in with CGI or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought, I liked when Cameron Diaz and J-Lo did that weird turn your back thing. and no one got it. And Cameron Diaz was like, live a little. Like, have fun with it. Try something.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't work very well.
It didn't work at all. Oh, but she sounded like a drunk aunt that I really wanted to hang out with.
I appreciated that they tried to do something that just wasn't read off a teleprompter or like do like a, you know, a pre-rehearsed sketch. Like, you know, to me, that seemed like something that they did on the fly while they were showing the clip montage. They were like giggling like, oh, you know, it'd be really funny if we turn around and like push our asses out and in these designer gowns, you know.
No, I think that J-Lo's nipple popped out while they were showing the clips and she was like, oh, shit. And she turned around to fix her dress. Cameron Diaz turned around too. And then they were like, we're back on in three. And they were like, oh, crap. And Cameron Diaz was like, just roll with it. And she stuck her ass out. And J-Lo was like, okay.
Holy crap. This is like a Dan Brown conspiracy.
I know. But seriously, that's a movie that I want
to
see.
What did you think of the weird like montages of actors talking to the camera in black and white about the craft of acting and their influences?
So that is just another thing of like taking, you know, cinema and filmmaking like way too far and giving it like way more power than it has. And like a lot of times I agree with what they're saying, but it's so just like self-indulgent and like self-gratifying and like sometimes kind of like poignant, you know. Gabourey Sidibe being like, oh, I do this because like I want to see more people like me on screen and like I want to see people that represent me and that like I relate to and stuff like that. And like that's like a really good reason, I think, to go into acting or to be inspired or, you know, whatever else. And then sometimes it was like Seth Rogen or something, you know, like talking about stuff.
Adam Sandler.
That was just confounding, you know, yeah. Like kind of this thing. And that's what I mean about the Academy going back and forth with this kind of thing to be like not notoriety because they clearly have that, but just like relevance.
Does the Academy not realize that his last two movies that came out in 2011 were Just Go With It and Jack and Jill?
Yeah, and I think they're like tied for, you know, most nominations of Razzies, right?
Yeah, something like that.
If only the Oscars knew. If only they knew what a Razzie was.
Yeah, to me it just seemed like a headache commercial.
Yeah, it kind of was. It was very Excedrin-y.
I kept waiting for Edward Norton to have two little yellow pills in his hand. Right. And they'd be the only thing that would be in color. And he'd be like, little yellow Oscar or something. I don't know. It'd be stupid.
I appreciated that stuff. And I think for some of the things that they did do differently, I feel like the In Memoriam montage was a little bit different. Or at least like how it was presented on white. It reminded me, it was like very 6 feet under.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That was a little bit different.
To get back to what I was saying earlier about how like they did away with a lot of things that made this feel so much shorter, even though it wasn't really that short. They did away with the performances of the Best Song nominees.
Right.
I mean, there were two, so that's kind of even funnier. And I would have liked to have seen Man or Muppet performed by the Muppets. I think that would have been pretty cool to watch.
That would have been amazing, and that would have been totally talked about. And I guess I totally forgot about that, because I feel like the last time that I saw the Oscars live was probably when like Motorcycle Diaries was nominated for Best Song.
Oh, that's right. It was, wasn't it?
That was a really long time ago. I mean, I've probably watched them since, but like consistently paid attention and was super into them, I think was then. I don't even remember what year that was. But I remember thinking like, oh, yeah, like I think, was it that year that they sort of had all the songs happen at once? Or all around each other?
Yeah, I remember there was some weird thing, like, it was the year that Dreamgirls was nominated, and they had, like, a turnstile on the stage.
Yeah.
And it was, like, different sets, and they kept spinning around, and usually, you know, they spread them out throughout the course of the night, or at least the ones that I remember most fondly, the ceremonies that I remember were the ones in, like, the early 90s from when I was, you know, 12, 13, and just realizing how much I was into movies and really getting into movies. And I used to tape them and watch the ceremonies over and over and over again. To me, the most fascinating parts of the ceremonies were when they are giving out an acting award and you get to see all five people at once in the little boxes. Yeah. I really like
that anymore.
Well, they did that this year. I feel like the past couple years they've done this strange thing where they would bring five actors out to present the award.
Right. That's right.
And each one of them would say like to one specific nominee. And I think the thing that bothered me the most was the year that Anne Hathaway was nominated for Rachel Getting Married. Not that performance specifically. I kind of think she should have won that year, actually. But the moment where she was doing her part in the Best Actress montage, it was Shirley MacLaine who was talking to her and sort of like setting it up like, Anne Hathaway, you are a national treasure. And it kept cutting back to Anne Hathaway. And Anne Hathaway was sitting there with her like hands on her chest and she was mouthing, you know, oh my God, I love you. This is so amazing. Like, she's mouthing all this stuff to Shirley MacLaine. And all I could think was, Shirley MacLaine probably didn't even see Rachel getting married. She's reading off a teleprompter.
They did something like that this year where they had the previous winner come out, which they always do, but they had them like address them by their first name.
Yeah, it was an okay medium for me, just because not only they did that, which is fine, whatever, but they also showed a clip. And I'm a big fan of the Oscar clip. I like seeing what scene they put in there. Like, for example, for Nick Nolte's performance in Warrior, neither of the two scenes that I was totally sure were going to be his Oscar clip were his Oscar clip. Yeah. So that was interesting to see, like, what part. And like we were talking earlier with Moneyball and Brad Pitt, like, he always seems to be reclining in a chair.
Yeah, I was kind of like, what is this movie about? Like, I mean, I know what it's about, but like, what is his character about?
Yes. So wrapping up, do you have any closing Oscar thoughts?
Why wasn't Spy Kids 4D nominated?
For best 4D movie?
Yeah. That's the other thing, too. It's the Academy for Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and they give away these science-y awards, and they give away these arts awards, but they don't really give away ones that are sort of both. And we've sort of talked about this before, but, like, the collaborative kind of Oscar and how that will open up this whole wormhole. And, like, I also think that, like, the way that they deal with animation is, like, very rigid and not, like, progressive. Like, they're really weird about motion capture. They give stuff to CG, but, like, it has to be more, like, traditional, quote-unquote, animation. You know, Rango was great. I liked Rango. I think you didn't really care for it.
I was lukewarm on it, like most things that were nominated. Yeah. I thought it was fine. I would have preferred Kung Fu Panda 2 won, but of the other nominees, I mean, I didn't see Chico and Rita or A Cat in Paris, so...
I thought A Cat in Paris was kind of boring. It was super cute, and it was, like, interestingly drawn, but I was surprised that it was nominated. And in Chico and Rita, I loved. It's, like, very adult, and the soundtrack is awesome, and the animation is great and everything. But, I you know, it was one of those movies that I was like, oh, that's awesome that they nominated. It will never win, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I think Puss in Boots, too. Like, you never really thought that it was going to win. I think we even talked about that. Yeah. We didn't even really think it would get nominated.
I think we were like, yeah, maybe, but Cars 2, definitely not. So
right.
At least we were right about that.
That's true. I think for everything that my gripes about the Academy, I don't think there was anything that was nominated that shouldn't have been, but I'm only saying that because I haven't seen most of the nominations. To your point earlier that you were so-so about a lot of movies that came out last year, I think there was a lot of really good performances last year.
Yeah.
At least in some of the stuff that I saw. Not all of that stuff got nominated, but which we talked about some of that. But I don't think that anything was like, oh, that clearly doesn't belong. Or at least as far as, like, the traditional Oscar noms go, you know?
Yeah. All the nominated performances, with the exception of maybe Glenn Close, which I just, in that Oscar clip even, I was like, oh, boy. I wasn't a big fan of her performance in that movie. I think Janet McTeer was the heart and soul of that thing. It's just, for a movie that's such a passion project, apparently, for Glenn Close, it was so weirdly lacking in any sort of passion at all on screen. Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to dump on the guy because I'm sure he's wonderful, but Jean Dujardin, which did I do a good job there, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds pretty
thank
good.
You. I was not that thrilled that he won. I guess maybe that he won. I guess he could be nominated, but I'm just tired of looking at him smiling, if that makes any sense.
I actually don't mind him smiling. And they actually made a really funny, either Funny or Die or College Humor. One of those sites made a short of him, like, auditioning for all these movies that European actors do after they win an Oscar or are nominated or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they cited, you know, Christoph Waltz from, you know, Inglourious Basterds, who then went on to do, like, The Green Hornet. There's a bunch of stuff where, like, just, like, you know, these, like, esteemed actors kind of just, like, go play villains or something. And he's, like, doing all these line readings for, like, all these different kinds of movies, and, like, one was, like, Spy Kids 5D and, like, all that stuff, and it was, like, kind of hilarious and endearing, but, like, that's kind of all I think of him as, like, kind of hilarious and endearing. Like, I don't think of him as, like, this amazingly deep actor, you know?
Yeah.
So either he will, like, get a role that proves that, or he will always be sort of this novelty win that people kind of forget about.
So we usually grade movies at the end of these Scorncasts. We don't really have anything to grade, but I'm going to be the bigger man and grade myself, even though I hand out grades on past judgment on all these movies. But I will just say for the record that I got 17 out of 24 on my Oscar pool at work.
Wow.
I did not win. No, that's not a wow. I didn't win. So in terms of the percentage wise, that works out to, I think, roughly 70%. So I'm going to give myself a C-.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're at least passing. I don't know, I feel like I probably wouldn't get that many.
What really screwed me up was the costume design Oscar.
Yeah.
Because I knew I should have put the artist, because that's what everyone was saying would win. And my logic was, well, it's not in color. So
yeah, exactly.
They're going to give it to a movie where there was a lot of color in the, you know, artistic design and stuff. So I picked Jane Eyre, I think, which in retrospect was really stupid. So if not for that, I would have won, because I was one short of being the winner. So basically, thanks for nothing, 2012 movies.
Yes, seriously.
And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. As always, you can check out PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, where you can leave us comments, subscribe to our posts, and follow us on Twitter. And you can also email us at scornpop@gmail.com. Now, Ghostface and I are off to Hollywood to pitch our extremely timely animated Oscars movie, in which Angelina Jolie's right leg and Jennifer Lopez's nipples go on a wacky road trip with Meryl Streep's 3 Academy Awards. Sacha Baron Cohen will do all the voices, of course.